24 hours ago, Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce was on this show explaining her decision in the case of baby Sophia Knutson. She has decided not to prosecute the parents of the baby, Beth Ann Kozel and Russell Knutson, saying that she just did not have enough evidence to prove criminal negligence beyond a reasonable doubt. In our discussion yesterday, I asked her how that relates to the case of Dalia Payne, the 24-year-old daycare worker for Happy-Go-Lucky Daycare in Ferguson, who drove a van load of kids to the St. Louis Science Center on August 7th. And one of them, 3-year-old Ricky Dixon, ended up being left in one of the vans, left behind for maybe up to an hour or so on that hot, sticky day here in St. Louis. And we talked about that briefly in the context of our discussion yesterday. And then Ms. Joyce was on with Charlie Brennan this morning. And as I was listening, it seemed to me that she was offering some sort of a plea bargain to Ms. Payne, or at least was open to one. So I've invited her back here this afternoon, as well as John Shellhorse, who is the attorney for Dalia Payne. Jennifer, I'm going to start with you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Explain again what this deal is that you're willing to make in Ms. Payne's case.
Well, this was our recommendation on the file, which was always our recommendation on the file. This was nothing new. This had been communicated some time ago to her then defense attorney. So this was nothing new as a result of the recent events. It was always our recommendation on this case.
And what was that recommendation?
It was a probation recommendation, what's called an SIS, which means that if she completes the term of the probation, that this would not be a conviction on her record. But Paul, may I say there's been a couple of new developments?
Absolutely.
Actually in the last couple of hours. First and foremost, Mr. Shellhorse came to see me today at noon and indicated to me that he had some information regarding this case, which he previously had not disclosed to us. And this was information that would definitely, if it checks out and it is true, would tend to benefit his client. When I asked him why he did not come forward that at any time within the past 6 weeks, he said that it was probably a mistake that he had not done so. Then the second thing that has just happened moments ago is I've received some information that Ms. Payne actually has a different attorney now representing her, that a different attorney has entered their appearance, and so I'm unclear as to whether Mr. Shellhorse is even still the attorney for this woman.
Well, we have John Shellhorse on the other line here, so let's clear up both of these things. John, how are you today?
Fine, thank you, Paul.
Are you still the attorney of record for Dalia Payne?
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know if she's informed you of this, but she's also hired a different attorney who's entered their appearance. So it's pretty unusual to have this type of situation.
But you guys were both in the same office just a couple of hours ago, right? So would that mean that she's not happy with something? And I mean, fill me in here, John. What's going on?
Well, several weeks ago, my client did meet with another firm and did have conversations with an attorney. It's my understanding that attorney was never retained. However, they went ahead and entered their appearance. When I appeared in court and saw that entry on top of mine, I spoke to the judge about it, and he signed an order withdrawing that entry and setting the case for October 3rd. For a status conference.
That's next Wednesday we're talking about.
Correct.
So this is all going to get resolved in a court next Wednesday, at least the matter of who is representing Ms. Payne?
Well, it's in my mind, it's already been resolved.
Okay.
But we just called that law firm, and they confirmed to us that they have entered their appearance on behalf of Ms. Payne. So, I mean, it doesn't matter to me who the attorney is.
Okay.
It's just that this is very irregular. This particular circumstance, and I'm not quite sure who is speaking on behalf of this woman at this point.
But does it muddy the waters in terms of what you've offered?
No, it does not. Our offer was made in this case when we originally issued the case, and it is based on the facts as presented in the police report. As I stated earlier, Mr. Shellhorse came to my office today for the first time to speak to anybody in our office about this case, and he indicated that he had additional information. We told him that we would certainly investigate that information, and that may change our opinion about the case.
John, what's the new information?
Now, you know what I've got to say, that I don't think it would be appropriate to publicly discuss that at this point.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm going to respond, Jennifer, to Paul's question. I did. There is no new information. The information that I spoke to Jennifer about is based on my review of police evidence, and that is of the videotapes, and as well as speaking with witnesses. Those are all things that were available to the circuit attorney's office and certainly should have been incorporated into their investigation.
Do they have to do with the amount of time that the child was in the car or the van?
No. That's not relevant. The issue is whether or not the child was left, and clearly the child was left.
Okay. This new information or old information that's now being newly discussed, what does that do, John, to the disposition of the case in your mind?
Well, it doesn't do anything to the disposition, Paul. I believe when we spoke several weeks ago, I told you it was my client's position that she was not guilty, that she's not going to plead guilty, and her position hasn't changed.
Okay. Now, Jennifer, explain to me exactly what it is that Dalia Payne is charged with. Is it endangering the welfare of a child?
Yes, she's charged with endangering the welfare of a child second degree.
All right.
And the information that Mr. Shellhorse is referring to is not included in any investigative report. When I discussed this with him today and I asked him, you know, my goodness, why would you not bring this forward earlier? He indicated that he felt that it was a mistake that he had not done so. So we have the information now. We're looking at it. We'll certainly consider it, and we'll discuss it with whoever happens to be Ms. Payne's attorney.
Okay.
Is it irregular as well, Jennifer, for the circuit attorney to express some gentle criticism of the way an attorney is operating their case?
Well, I don't mean to be critical of Mr. Shellhorse, but I don't understand how not sharing this evidence and withholding this evidence operated in the best interest of his client. You know, we all want to make the right decision here, and so information like this is very important, and I'm glad that he brought it forward. I'm glad that we have the opportunity to consider it now. I just wish we could have done that 6 weeks ago.
All right, John, you want to respond?
Yeah, I believe that's a complete mischaracterization of the circumstances. The only evidence I have is what was available to the police department and to Ms. Joyce's office.
That's not correct, John.
In fact, some of the evidence I got was directly from the police, and Ms. Joyce told me today that they didn't have that information. So I'm not sure where she's coming from. It's not my job to do her investigation. It's my job to beat her over the head with it at trial.
I'm laughing because of the terminology you use there. Jennifer?
Well, I mean, again, it comes down to, you know, what's in the best interest of his client and what's in the best interest of the victim in this case and the community. And the interests of the community are served when all the facts are out in the open and available, and playing hide the ball so we can surprise somebody at trial or something like that. And I'm not saying that that's what Mr. Shellhorse is doing, but I'm not sure that kind of a tactic is really in the interest of justice. As I said before, we really want to understand all the facts in this case so that we can decide what's the appropriate disposition. I'm grateful that Mr. Shellhorse brought this information forward now. It was not available to us, and we were not aware of it earlier.
Well, that's patently not true, Jennifer. It's always been available to you. All you had to do was send an investigator out to ask questions of some witnesses and review the information the police already had.
Mr. Shellhorse, are you making these comments? Do they have anything to do with the fact that the circuit attorney's office has decided not to charge anyone in the baby Sophia case?
No. No, absolutely not. My client and I came up with a strategy in this case early on, and we stuck by that strategy. Unfortunately, this whole situation has kind of spun out of control and has forced our hand in some things, and that was the reason that I met with Jennifer Joyce today, was to clear the air. But
again, the discussion of forcing their hand, I mean, this case has been investigated by the police, and a police report was prepared, and that is the ordinary course in every single case. That is, the police are the investigating body. The prosecutors prosecute the case. And in this particular case, based on the information in the police report, it warranted that charges were filed. We now are aware of additional information that we were not aware of before, that Mr. Shellhorse has brought forward that we are investigating, that could change this case. But to the extent that it's, you know, someone was forced to show their hand or something, you know, this is not a poker game. This is about justice and what's best for the community and what's best for the victim in this case and the defendant in this case. And that is really what I think we should be focusing on, and not whether this is a poker game or whether somebody's going to beat somebody over the head. I really don't think that we're doing anybody a service by discussing this important legal process in those kind of terms.
But I'm sorry, Paul, I you just said something to us that bears a follow-up question. You said police investigate and prosecutors prosecute. Mm-hmm. And when you were on with us yesterday, you mentioned that your office had done a reenactment. And that sounds like that may sound like an investigation for some.
Right. And that's in the difference in that case, in this particular case with Ms. Payne, she made statements to the police at the time that she was arrested that formed the basis of our charges. With respect to the parents in the case that we discussed yesterday, they never made any statements that formed the basis for charges. Their statements had no information that I could use for charges. So we continued to look for information that would form the basis for charges in that case. And then we looked at everything, and we continued to investigate with the police in that case because we didn't have enough evidence to press charges, and we were looking to see if we could develop some. Ultimately, we found that we could not. But that's a different situation than Ms. Payne's case, where the evidence was there at the outset that supported the charges.
John, would D'Elia Payne accept a plea bargain of probation and a suspended imposition of sentence?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Because she's not guilty.
So you two are at loggerheads here. Did you discuss that deal today when you two met in your office, Jennifer?
But what I told Mr. Shellhorse was that even though I was disappointed that it had taken so long to get this information to us, that we would certainly look at it, and we would look at it with an open mind, and we would look at it thoroughly. And we would let him know if it changed our decision on how we should approach this case. At this point, I'm not certain that he is still officially her attorney. If he is, we would certainly get back to him on it. If there is another attorney, we would certainly start to communicate with them.
John, when you say that Ms. Payne is not guilty, do you mean that she did not leave 3-year-old Ricky Dixon in the van at the Science Center for nearly an hour on August 7th?
No, I am not saying that. I am saying she's not guilty under the statute with which she's charged. She is not guilty of criminal negligence in this case. There were a series of mistakes made where other people were involved in making those mistakes, not just D'Elia, that led to the circumstances. So it's my position that she's not guilty with what she's charged, because the state would have to show criminal negligence on D'Elia's part to convict her of this. And I don't believe any criminal negligence was involved.
And Jennifer, in the case we were talking about yesterday, the baby Sophia case, you said that to prove criminal negligence beyond a reasonable doubt, you have to establish that Russell Knutson knew that he was the last person to be with Sophia and that the baby was in his care at the time that he parked his car. How is that particular point different from Ms. Payne's case?
Well, in the evidence in the Knutson case was, even after a month's investigation, the evidence that we had was that the father did not realize that child was in his car
right. When
he parked the car and he left that day.
Okay, so couldn't D'Elia Payne say, I didn't realize that the kid was still in the van?
Well, and based on additional information that we just received today, you know, we're going to look at that and see if that claim would be valid or if there's evidence to support that claim. But based on the information in the police report, she was in a position to know that she was responsible for children on that bus.
John, is that the basis of your claim?
Is the basis of your claim
she didn't know that the kid was still in the van?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, that's the basis.
And so that's where you think that there was no criminal negligence?
Yes.
The point is, though, Paul, that she was aware that there were children on that van. She knew that she was not driving an empty van to the Science Center. And the parents, the father in the Sophia Knutson case, did not know that he had his daughter in the car. He assumed that the car was empty.
Okay.
So there's a clear difference in the facts as they stand right now. As I said, that could change. There's a couple of new developments today that could change this case, and we look forward to looking into those.
All right. Before I let you go, John, you had something else you wanted to say.
Well, yeah, I'm not aware of any new developments. The facts are the facts. They've been the same facts all along.
Okay.
But just as Sophia Knutson's father was unaware that Sophia had been left in the car, I do not understand how Ms. Joyce, based on the police report, and I'm assuming it's the same police report that I have, can come to the conclusion that my client knew that Ricky Dixon was in the car when she exited the vehicle.
Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. You guys are going to be in court next Wednesday, is that right? I mean, as of right now, the plan is 1 week from today, you're in court dealing with this?
Well, I'll be there.
There will be someone from my office there.
Okay. Yeah. We look forward to hearing more from both sides in this story as it continues. Thank you very much, Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce and Attorney John Shellhorse, both here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.